This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello and welcome to Trumpet Hour this Wednesday, July 26th, 2023. This week, I'm your host, Philip Nice. Jeremiah Jacques and I alternate on these Wednesday programs, bringing you news, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, and the future as best we can. Today, I'll connect with Mihailo Zekic to look at a significant development over in Israel that will sound familiar to Americans, as well as Australians, Canadians, and English-speaking and Western nations. We'll do that for our first segment. It's something that we've recognized happening in America, and it turns out the same trend is gripping Israel. In America, there has been a pushback with some success, and in Israel, especially with a new law passed just on Monday, there is a pushback with some success. And like in America, a lot of it revolves around one man. We're also going to talk about Trumpet Hour itself and the Philadelphia Trumpet, what's involved in producing the trumpet, and what isn't involved in producing the trumpet. And in our last segment, you will hear a familiar voice. And if you want a break from negative news, if you want a few minutes in a world that's not falling apart, but a world, well, a different world that's coming together, make sure you stay with us for that. That's what we're going to do today. Thank you for spending your valuable time. And I do thank you because it is valuable. But thank you for spending your valuable time and joining us for today's episode of Trumpet Hour. Mihailo Zekic joins us now by teleconference from Jerusalem. Mihailo, good to see you.
Good to be here.
One of the more major developments in recent years in Israeli politics has just happened. You are the one who broke the news to me in email. I knew it was an issue. It was being worked on, but I didn't know what had transpired. Can you give us the who, what, when, and where of this development?
Yes. So for longtime listeners of our program, for those that have been following our website, they would know that a trend we've been following even since the last year when a new Israeli government came into power was the crisis involving the court system, specifically the Supreme Court. Benjamin Netanyahu, who's a longtime player in Israeli politics, came back for a third term or a third stint as prime minister, I guess I should say, in November, and he has made it a priority since then to reform the Israeli Supreme Court, to restrict some of the powers it has amassed that technically don't really have much to do with interpreting laws, power that involves them meddling in government executive decisions or vetoing new laws or the kind of thing that most Supreme Courts normally don't do. The Israeli left, who have relied on the Supreme Court as a check on Netanyahu's agenda, have gone absolutely ballistic from it, whether it's the opposition members of the Knesset boycotting Netanyahu's government decisions or just the average protester on the street. And for months, culminating in March, there have been street protests almost every week, if not for week in, week out, for consecutive weeks, trying to pressure Netanyahu to stop. There's been involvements in foreign governments even, and even members of his own government, whether cabinet-level officials or members of the security agencies even, trying to do things that get into Netanyahu's way, like publicly breaking with him, calling for him to stop, calling on their own employees under them to participate in the protests, even had military reservists refusing to show up for duty, trying to stop Netanyahu from implementing this reform package. And Netanyahu has been trying for months and months. He has a majority in the Knesset. And finally, as of yesterday, he was able to use that majority to pass the first bill in his judicial reform program. Again, this has been months in the making. A lot of people thought that he might have even been, or a lot of people probably hoped more than anything, that he would have been willing to back down from this if the pressure got too big, and it could have turned any direction, circumstances, that is. But he finally put his foot down and passed the first bill. For now, Netanyahu's in a bit of a high position. He's finally started to implement this agenda he's been trying to do for so long, and it looks like that not much is going to be stopping him in the days to come.
Now, Mihailo, I don't follow Israel politics as closely as you do, of course, but it does seem like there is a radical left there. I can see that. A lot of people can see that. And unlike the United States, the radical left has control of the Supreme Court. And increasingly, it seems like anyone who doesn't want what the radical left is pushing has basically one option, Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, so for our listeners that might not know a bit about Netanyahu, it'd be good to maybe fill in on who he is, what he's been doing, why everybody hates him. He's been in politics for a long time. He first served as prime minister from 1996 to 1999. That was when Bill Clinton was in the White House and Boris Yeltsin was in Russia. He then served again as prime minister from 2009 to 2021. He was ousted in an election crisis. And then after another election, he became prime minister again in November and still is to this day. This makes him Israel's longest serving prime minister. He is from Likud, which is the main conservative political party in Israel. Netanyahu has done a lot to really shake Israeli society up. Israel, for most of its history, has had socialist governments, a very tax-heavy economy unfriendly to businesses. Netanyahu has done a lot to reverse that. He's liberalized Israel's business laws. He's invested a lot in technology as well, which has made Israel a world leader in new and progressing technologies. And also a really popular place for people to start their own businesses. I've heard once that Tel Aviv is considered the startup capital of the world now. He's also done a lot on the foreign sphere. People might remember back in 2020 when he and U.S. President Donald Trump negotiated the Abraham Accords with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, Morocco, some Arab countries that have had some friendlier relations than others with Israel. Some had unofficial relations to this point, but still, considering how most of the Arab world doesn't recognize Israel and for most of Israel's history has tried to wipe Israel out, this was a pretty big achievement. As an Israeli citizen, you can now fly to Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Bahrain on an Israeli passport without any problems. And he's also done a lot to put his foot down on Palestinian terror, on Iran especially. There was an infamous episode where he in the United Nations held up the wing of an Iranian drone he shot down over Israel for everybody to see. He's done a lot to get inside Iran and subvert, say, their nuclear program. He's been very much security first. And that's not to say the Israeli left isn't security first per se. A lot of people in Israel from all sides of the political aisle see the unique security situations that Israel has, and they don't want to have rockets and bombs dropped on them. But at the same time, they don't like Netanyahu's conservative direction. He relies on a lot of Orthodox parties with ties to the ultra-Orthodox community in Israel, religious parties, to form his governments. And they don't like that he fosters a climate that takes Israel in a more conservative direction. And they especially don't like that he's been in power for so long and just never seems to go away. He's 73 now. And so they're basically at this point desperate to do anything on getting rid of him. And the Supreme Court, which the government has very limited control over or say in who gets to sit on it, is one of their favorite toys to go after him with.
And we saw that resentment against Netanyahu and what he stands for perfectly encapsulated in those protests, especially in March on this particular issue. And this issue isn't just kind of an issue of the day or a hot button issue. This is an issue that's trying to reverse really decades of increasingly liberal and socialist power exerted through the Supreme Court. So why were those protests so heated? And why did we have not so many this time around? And he actually turned it from a loss or a withdrawal into a success.
Well, to give the history of the Israeli Supreme Court, there's a bit more of a foundational context to this. But the date we want to focus on is 1992. That was when Israel passed, or the Knesset, the parliament there, passed a series of basic laws. Israel doesn't have a written constitution. They've talked about for a long time of getting one. But as substitute, they have the what they call basic laws, which are not constitutional per se. They can be overturned, but they take precedence over other laws the Israeli government has made. And some hope one day they will be formally codified into a more structured constitution. And in 1992, the Knesset passed some laws enshrining the value of human dignity and liberty into these basic laws. Here's a quote from one of them. "There shall be no violation of the life, body, or dignity of any person," end quote. And these were purposely vaguely defined. It's not like the Knesset wanted the blow-by-blow on what constitutes all of these, but a lot of governments have these kinds of provisions in their constitution. Israel felt, you know, now's the time for us to have something similar. We value life, dignity, etc. And maybe it's their fault for not defining these more clearly, but the Supreme Court took these laws and how vaguely defined they were and ran with it. Aaron Barak, who was a Supreme Court justice at the time and later became president of the Supreme Court from 1995 to 2006, called these laws a constitutional revolution. Here's a quote from him about these laws. Mr. Barak said, quote, "From now on, these laws, bind not only the citizens and residents and not only the administrative authorities, such as the government and local authorities. From now on, they bind the Knesset itself," end quote. In other words, the Supreme Court sees these laws as binding on everything the government does, everything the Knesset does, every facet of Israeli society, and the court is the only one that can interpret what these laws actually mean. When you have something as very vague as dignity and life, like, those are pretty abstract concepts, and the Supreme Court has used how abstract these concepts are to push its agenda. For example, they interpreted once that if a Palestinian marries an Israeli, that's barring that Palestinian from moving to Israel constitutes a violation of these laws. Now, we're not here to divide families, and you could argue either way on this, but this is what Barak said in a 2006 email on why they decided that this constitutes a violation. He wrote, "I determine that the right to family life is a constitutional right of the Israeli spouse and his children. Since we do not have specific articles in our Bill of Rights that deal with equality and the right to family life, I decided that these rights are part of the right to human dignity." He decided. The court decided. The courts are supposed to interpret laws, not make new laws. And again, maybe it's the Knesset's fault for not specifying what they meant by this. But the court, and this is just one example, the courts have been making decisions like this for decades. And because they're the Supreme Court, the final law of the land, or interpreters of the law of the land, supposedly, the government is afraid to look at these decisions and try and make any changes because, I mean, it looks really bad. And if it opens up a whole other can of worms on who has the final authority, et cetera, et cetera. You see like this with Roe v. Wade in 1973 in the United States, that right to privacy somehow means right to an abortion. That's clearly not what the intent of the law was, and it clearly was not the court's job to decide whether that was law or not. On top of that, there's also the reasonableness standard, where the courts have used the standard on whether something is reasonable or not, even if it isn't necessarily illegal by the laws themselves, on whether something can happen. And through this standard, they vetoed government decisions, they vetoed even cabinet appointees, they vetoed new laws from being made before anybody's even actually challenged them. For example, just earlier this year, Netanyahu tried to appoint a man named Aryeh Deri to a cabinet position. He's been convicted of tax fraud, and normally that would have barred him from serving in the government. But the Knesset, the same Knesset that made those basic laws way back when, made an update and an exemption for Deri to be able to serve. And the Supreme Court vetoed that because, due to the circumstances, we determined this was not reasonable. It would have been unreasonable for Deri to serve in this position. So the law that barred Deri in the first place from serving was made by the Knesset, and the same Knesset made an edit to that law, and the Supreme Court was saying whether or not that edit was legitimate, even though they got the authority from the same place. I read one commentary saying that at this point, the Supreme Court has become Israel's unofficial House of Lords. Like in Britain, this unelected group of legislators that have a say on whatever the government does. The House of Lords today obviously doesn't have that kind of power, but it historically did. And to complicate matters more, how to get onto the Supreme Court is very, very different from a lot of governments where, say, the government nominates a justice and then they go through a confirmation process through legislative votes or that kind of thing. At this point, there's a judicial selection committee, which is composed of 9 members, 3 justices on the Supreme Court, including the president of the court itself, 2 cabinet ministers, one of them has to be the Minister of Justice, 2 Knesset members, and 2 representatives of the Israel Bar Association. So 5 out of those 9 members aren't even actually elected officials. 3 of them are court justices, and 2 of them are members of the Bar Association. So that in and of itself means, in a sense, the judicial system in general is self-appointing. There's obviously a little bit more wrinkles to it than just that. But for years and years, the Supreme Court has been able to get people that agree with its views on different things, like the reasonableness standard, like Barack's so-called revolution, onto itself. And because of that, the government has been very, very hard for the government, whether it's been Netanyahu or some other prime minister, to be able to clean house for these kinds of circumstances. The latest news from yesterday is pretty good news for Israel and for Netanyahu. We're seeing the, shall we say, the Israeli deep state that has gotten in the way of his agenda and through inadvertently, perhaps, caused a lot of crises in Israel's security situation, especially with the Palestinians. That's starting to get reversed now. And it looks, this is only one of many bills Netanyahu wants to pass, and looks like he's about to move forward with them. And with that, we could see Israel in general be free from these kinds of shackles of judicial restraint, free from political instability, or relatively so, and become a more prosperous, more stable, more resurgent state. The Trumpet expects Israel to go through a mini resurgence, if you will. That's based off of prophecies located in places like 2 Kings chapter 14. We have an article published in the Trump print edition from last year called Bibi is Back. That's called Bibi is Back, and that is a good resource to go to if you want to learn more on why we expect this to happen, what Netanyahu's victory against the courts mean, and what the Bible has to say about modern Israeli politics.
So a deep state struggle, we're familiar with that here in the United States, and there's one in Israel as well, and you're keeping an eye on it. Mihailo Zekic, in between laboring and digging and learning and touring and trying to fit dinner in there somewhere, you are keeping an eye out on Middle East news. You are initiating ideas for Trumpet Hour segments, and I thank you for it, and our listeners thank you for it.
Thank you.
If the people are to rule a country, if that's the idea, if it really is a republic and or a democracy, there is one way that they exert that rulership, and that's through elections. They elect representatives. Then it's the representatives who make the decisions. In Israel and America, the average voter doesn't directly vote on how to set a budget or whether to go to war. He elects a representative to the legislature, that's Congress in the United States or the Knesset in Israel, a representative to the legislature to make those decisions. So if a Supreme Court or some other power overrules that, it is overruling the people's one and only means of controlling the government. So there's a pattern there, isn't there? Give parts of the government enormous power, then get control over those parts of the government. Then you have control over the people. In this case, get control over a 15-person court, decree that things are illegal unless you find them to be reasonable. And you turn individual liberty into a chapter in history rather than a present reality. I've seen that pattern before, and you have too. I'm seeing it still, and you are too, in America, in Israel, and elsewhere. Bibi is Back was the name of that article, and this is Trumpet Hour, and we will be right back. So I was just thinking about that introduction that we hear at the beginning of Trumpet Hour from the great big voice. News, economy, politics, trends. And I was thinking that since Philadelphia Trumpet managing editor Joel Hilliker created this program in the year 2015, Trumpet Hour has been telling you about the economy. You might remember regular updates from Robert Morley as the American economy and Europe and other economies staggered from one form of life support to another, and they're still staggering, and Trumpet Hour is still reporting to you on that. Andrew Miller and Richard Palmer and others continue to watch that for you and bring you updates on that, especially on our Friday Week in Review edition of Trumpet Hour. And dramatic developments are occurring with inflation and central banks and the actual currencies that we use, and smothering, suffocating debt. And here at the Trumpet, someone is devoting time, more than one someone is devoting time to watching this and researching this and seeing what's been said by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury and by Plain Truth Editor-in-Chief Herbert W. Armstrong, reading what the Bible prophecies say and bringing that to you. And politics. Politics has been an increasingly important issue. It's use and abuse during the lifetime of this radio program. Policies that were really unfathomable in 2015, even after 8 years of the Barack Obama presidency, are now reality. Policies have changed, laws have changed, people have changed, the nation has changed. All these decisions being made, not just by elites, but by everyday people in terms of what we will allow, have added up to where we are and who we are. And here on Trumpet Hour, and much more so on the Trumpet Daily, our bigger brother program here at KPCG Radio, staff members are devoting time to watching politics closely, looking for certain developments, certain trends, and bringing that to you. Trends, discovery, family. Trumpet Hour has brought you that as well over these past 8 years, and health. We talked a couple weeks ago about the contributions that Jorg Mardian has made. And health, too, has become a more pressing issue for many of us and for our nations over the past few years. And if you want to get balanced and get truth and get motivated, go to thetrumpet.com and search J-O-R-G. And then get off the computer and get moving. The Philadelphia Trumpet Magazine and Trumpet Hour and the Trumpet Daily and the other programs on KPCG, they do bring you more than just the news, which is interesting to me. There's a lot going on here with the Trumpet and with the organization behind it, as we'll talk about a little bit in our third segment. thetrumpet.com/subscribe, by the way, if you do not already get the Philadelphia Trumpet, thetrumpet.com/subscribe. And if you do subscribe, you get, or you maybe you already get, 10 issues a year. It'll be completely free. You hear that on some of the programs sometimes. All our literature is completely free. There's no creatively worded indirect request for a love offering, no suggested donation amounts or anything like that. You sign up with your information, which is kept private and secure, and after 10 issues, you say, yes, I'd like to continue subscribing, and you will keep getting 10 issues a year, every year, year after year, until this message is silenced, which will happen at some point, and we can talk about that in a future episode, not too far into the future. But back to the point, and this is just kind of a point that emerged as I was writing something else for this program, to introduce this program. I just kind of sat back and thought about it. The Trumpet has been that way since 1990, their very first issue. And the plain truth before it was that way from 1934, when Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong founded it, to his death in 1986. It has been free. The plain truth was free. And not only was it free, and not only is the Trumpet free, but there are no solicitations. There are no guilt trips or anything like that. And I was just thinking about this as I was writing something else for this program, and I thought, well, that is amazing, isn't it? And it's not that I've never thought about it before, but all that time, decade after decade, the plain truth was, and the Philadelphia Trumpet is, completely and truly free. And how does that work? I work here with the writers and the editors on that magazine, a staff that has grown bit by bit over these years, and you can just forget decades. What would that be, more than 300 issues? Of this magazine have been printed and mailed to hundreds of thousands of readers. And now this radio station, KPCG, hums along every day. Computers are computing and mixers are mixing and antenna are electrified and air conditioners are running and lights are on. And dozens and dozens and dozens of people are reporting for work. And the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine is going out to more than 200,000 addresses. The Key of David television program has purchased network airtime in 47 states and Washington, D.C., and the Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico, and Canada, and the Caribbean, and Australia, and New Zealand, and a really good new station in the Philippines. And it's all free, without a telethon or a passing of the plate or even a hint-hint. So I wasn't planning to get into all that because by now I take it for granted, as I say. And this is not a solicitation, of course, because the whole point here is that there are no solicitations. So the point I'm making is, isn't that unique? Isn't that interesting? People write in or call in sometimes and say, I'm amazed that all this is free. And it really and truly is free. And it reminds me, oh yeah, it is. This whole thing, this whole project, this whole work is powered by something else. And it's not an endowment. And it's not a millionaire benefactor. And yet it continues to go out. The Trumpet magazine is a quality magazine. The KPCG radio programs are quality programs. I mean, you can only do so much. I'm not recognizing myself as a quality voice talent, but the magazines and the television programs and radio programs, they're quality programs as much as we can manage, and they all go out completely free. So even if you already get the Trumpet, or even if you work at the Trumpet, in my case, that's something to think about every now and then. At the very least, it makes the Trumpet, Trumpet Hour, Trumpet Daily, The Key of David, very different from other news magazines or religious magazines. So there is a work, an organization, a producer, publisher, obviously, behind these programs, the Philadelphia Church of God. And I'm not an expert on church sizes or anything, but it's a small church. We're not talking millions of people. We're not talking hundreds of thousands. And I've met, actually, many, many of those of us that there are, and they are not wealthy, but it is these people, and it is others who choose to lend support of different kinds who are helping to make this happen. And this work, this operation, this message keeps going out, going on 90 years now after it was massively revived during the lifetime of Herbert W. Armstrong. So this work, we here at the Trumpet often refer to it with a capital W. This work keeps churning, keeps working year after year. And at this point, it's even generation after generation. So that's something. It doesn't by itself prove everything you hear or read from the Trumpet to be true, but it sure does demand some kind of explanation. Are there any other organizations that you know of that are like that? Where the financial support is there, but you can't trace it back to an endowment, to a billionaire, to a government initiative, to taxpayer dollars, to an NGO, a non-governmental organization, or to any other normal, traditional, you know, human source of capital. How does that work? You do have to account for that. And that's one thing that it makes you want to look into it a little deeper. That's a pretty unique kind of organization. And as we're about to talk about, this organization does way more than produce the Trumpet and the Key of David, which are its main projects. But it does do way more than that. Books and booklets, a correspondence course and websites, archaeology, Christian living, music, musicals, an Irish dance production, a college, a K-12 academy, a youth camp, a mini camp. One of these shows, I might make a full list and rattle them all off. Something is powering it all. I dare say that it isn't some kind of unique business management virtuoso genius, or I guess it would be some kind of nonprofit management virtuoso genius. You look at these projects, you look at this organization as a whole, and like we said in the previous show, there's clear government by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury. But if you're looking for some kind of nonprofit John D. Rockefeller, or the Steve Jobs of free literature, or the Albert Einstein of broadcasting, you're not going to find one. There's no like, oh, that's how it's getting done. But it's getting done. It's going out. It's growing. So if it's not a billionaire or a human genius, how is it getting done? How is it growing? What is behind the Trumpet anyway? Well, quite a lot, it turns out. I'll leave it to you to look into it, but I encourage you to look into it. You can look into a good chunk of what's getting done at thetrumpet.com. Click around there and see what all is getting produced daily, every day. And also go to the website pcg.church. So that's thetrumpet.com, of course, and also pcg.church. And you know, you can always write us at letters@thetrumpet.com. For our third segment, we have a treat for you in more ways than one. The first way in which it is a treat is that you get to hear a familiar voice.
Hello there.
Joining me here in this studio is the managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet, the creator of Trumpet Hour, and among several other things, the co-director of Summer Educational Program, Joel Hilliker. Mr. Hilliker, some Trumpet Hour listeners have asked you, some have asked me, what have you been up to lately?
Well, handing off Trumpet Hour, it was a bittersweet thing to do, but I've really loved listening to you and to Jeremiah Jacques, and just the way that you've been managing with aplomb and professionalism. I love listening to the show. I've been able to devote that time. It's freed up quite a bit of time for me to be able to devote mostly to just helping our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Fleury. We've been able to get quite a lot more material out and things that have been kind of in the pipeline for a long time that we're starting to get unclogged, which I'm really excited about. Another thing that I did was take the tour with the Celtic Throne Group, which I really enjoyed this past summer. That was just a phenomenal experience. But even there on the road, I was able to devote quite a lot of time to Mr. Fleury's material, which there's just no way that I would have been able to do that had I also been trying to keep up with Trumpet Hour. So it's been good.
You've had a busy summer with Celtic Throne. There was the ministerial conference as well, and pretty busy with that. I think there were something like, if I remember right, 16 or 21 lectures over the course of about 5 days. You were raised in rank to the office of evangelist at that conference, and then you plunged right into the next thing and the next and the next. And lately, this morning, this afternoon, throughout last week, this week, and next week, you've been involved in yet another major project that's really fun to talk about. And this is the second way in which this segment is a treat. We get to discuss with the listener Summer Educational Program.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to be a part of. I love it.
So I have the schedule in front of me, and this is what I want to, if I can, try to give the listener this sense of what a teenage SEP camper is coming into when they get off the plane in Oklahoma City. They drive up here to Edmond, Oklahoma, and they have the orientation lecture there in Armstrong Auditorium. And then they go right into, I'm looking at the schedule here, ignition, which is these early morning exercises, everybody together, breakfast, forum, fitness benchmarks. You've got sports, football, soccer, water polo, volleyball. You've got basketball, archery, cycling, I see speech, swimming, and this is all in the first 2 days, which was last week, and then more of the same classes. I get to serve in softball, so we saw the entire camp come through the softball diamond in 2 afternoons, which was fantastic. But in the same way that all of them were coming at us, all these activities are coming at them. I see song leading on here, preparation for the Sabbath, and then these evening activities of etiquette night. That there was something called a soak night. I saw some pictures from that, which was very enjoyable to look at those pictures even.
It's a big hit. Soak night is a big hit.
Faculty visits, which you actually had, you're on the list as one of the faculty who invited campers into your home and had discussions with them, Bible study. And then this week, more classes, different sports, track and field is on here, flag football is on here, I see rugby. And then this week they get to actually participate in clinics where they choose which sport or which activity they'd like to learn more about, which is a really neat, we're working on that in the softball staff, how to get 37 guys who want to learn more about softball, give them even more instruction built on what they learned while they were in their dorms the first week. But then there's other entire activities on here.
I love this, them having the opportunity to kind of select what they're interested in. We have quite an extensive file that they fill out. They check the things that they really want to do and how much they want to be involved in sports versus skill activities. Like, you could mention some of the like arts and crafts and other things that they can choose to do.
Right. There are sports on here like football and rugby, but then there's also golf, hymn accompaniment, hymn orchestra, water skiing. And then, like you said, the crafts, sewing, I see grilling, mountain biking, which you have evidence of participating in.
I took a little spill yesterday.
videography, canoeing, baking is on here, and some other sports, tennis. Quite a range. There's a whole way of life on this schedule.
Yeah, that's right. I what I love about that is, there are so many things that we want to give them the opportunity to do. We're trying to kind of expand their horizons and help them to find maybe some aptitudes that they didn't know they had or some interests, and just expose them to things that help them to realize there's a whole lot of cool things out there that you can expend your energy and time on. I always feel like we've got kids that they've never tried something and they get their first taste of it here at camp. But everybody's different. Everybody's got a different personality. There's definitely things that we want everyone to experience. And then there are other things that it's, and we talk to the kids, you know, it's okay to want to do something, to be good at something and want to do more of that at camp. That's fine. But also think about jumping into the thing that you've never done and that maybe you don't even think you would have an interest and just try it out. You know, there's definitely virtue. There's definitely advantages to doing both. So I love it when I see kids that are throwing themselves into an activity that they've never done before. So the last two nights we had camp outs with the kids here on the land. We brought all of the boys out to the woods and we were teaching them some skills like chopping firewood, how to start a fire with a little flint. They did some camp cooking. We had, some potatoes and things that they had laid out and they were seasoning them themselves, wrapping them up in tin foil, sticking them in the fire. We did. So you're chopping the wood, you're building the fire, then you're cooking your dinner on the fire. And then we had an epic game of capture the flag. And then we had some discussion. We had a little sing along and we finished the night with an astronomy lesson from one of our science teachers at Imperial Academy, Stephen Coates. He went out there and was teaching them about Neptune and about satellites and about Polaris. And just a lot packed into about a 5-hour period out in the woods. They also learned how to pitch tents and they were sleeping in the tents that night. They cooked their own breakfast this morning and then resumed activities with the rest of the camp. But some of these kids have never camped before. You know, some of them have never looked up into the heavens with any kind of curiosity. And when you see them doing these things that are just, you know, expanding their horizons, it's a very gratifying thing to see.
You see skills develop that they didn't know they had in some cases. You see personalities bloom in those situations as well.
Yeah.
And also this week, in addition to introducing the clinics, we have these blocks staked out for the futures. Can you tell us what's the futures and what's the goal and what do you what does the camper experience when he hits that time block?
Yeah, I love that program. I'll mention just before I talk about that, the other thing that we talk about with the staff is trying to get the kids victories, trying to help them to accomplish things that they couldn't. Like we're trying to give them things to do that they can succeed at. And they start to build a little bit of confidence. You know, a kid does something that he's never done before. And if we can set the bar at a point where it's challenging, but it's attainable, then they start to get this sense of momentum. And hey, you know, I didn't know that I could do this, or this seemed like, you know, you see the kid playing basketball and it just looks like, I would never be able to do what he's doing. But you give them something that they can actually attain and they start to gain success. Success breeds success, and you start to see this confidence. Like you mentioned, their personalities kind of blooming, and that really is an exciting aspect of camp that we see, you know, among a lot of the campers.
When you mentioned that, I remember I was a counselor at camp, and I had one guy, more than one, but he sort of looked like he was made to sit at a computer desk.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
there have been
a lot of those kids today.
Yeah, there have been more than one. And we were playing basketball, and like the other sports, there's so much positive encouragement and so much cheering for people, mm-hmm. and there's just a hard and fast rule that doesn't even really need to be enforced too heavily these days of, you know, don't criticize, don't bring that worldly, you know, negative type of sportsmanship into it. So this guy, I don't think he'd ever dribbled a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And after one, I think it was just one period of actual games, he hit a buzzer beater. It wasn't a three-pointer, but he hit this buzzer beater shot just because he was confident enough to try it,
Yeah.
And so again, you see the skills bloom, but also the personality, because he was pretty excited. I did not know I could do that.
Right. Well, that'll boost your confidence for sure.
Right. And you'll see that in, I'm sure, in these futures activities, which are different than the sports or even some of the crafts we've talked about.
Yeah. So we implemented this starting last year to a small degree, and then we've been implementing it within Imperial Academy more. And what the idea is, it's basically a club for boys we call Future Husbands and Fathers, and then the club for the girls is Future Helpmeets and Mothers. And the purpose of this is, we live in a world that where the God-given roles for men and women are under attack, and you know, kids grow up basically not knowing this basic knowledge that helped people to orient themselves for life for, you know, millennia. Now it's been lost, and kids are growing up without a compass and without a purpose. So we're trying to anchor this vision of your future, and you know, the whole vision of family really is, it goes out into eternity. You know, when you really understand why God created family, why he created husbands and wives and parents and children, it's a wonderful vision. We're trying to anchor that in these very practical skills, things like, you know, cooking and sewing and fixing drywall patches, you know, patching a drywall or wiring an electrical outlet or changing the tire of a car, or these tangible things that, it's amazing what we've seen as we've implemented this is the kids love it. They respond well. Like you tell them, this is how to do this thing. And it's just like we were describing when it comes to shooting a basketball or dribbling or those other sports related things. You teach them how to change a tire on a car and they feel like, hey, I can do that. You know, we kind of demystify these things that, you know, they need to know these things, but we're putting it in the context of their role within the family. So there's a purpose for learning these things. It gives you a sense of motivation and accomplishment, and just helping them to recognize, like, if you're going to succeed as a husband, as a wife, as a father, as a mother, you need skills, and you need to be competent. You need to be good at what you're doing. And there are a whole lot of things that factor into that. So we're able to provide a taste of that at camp. It's really not more than a taste, but our hope is that this will kind of awaken that sense of purpose and just help them moving forward.
It's just an awesome thing to be a part of. I got a glimpse of it. I'm the department head of catching fly balls. So I do one station at the softball field, and it is neat to just see all these personalities, all these different countries, all these different attitudes, different ways of responding to things. Hmm. And again, just seeing these young people come out of where they've been, they don't bring Netflix with them. They don't bring, you know,
right.
the technology. They don't.
No devices.
Yeah, no devices. And what they experience and who they become, again, just a taste is what they're exposed to, but who they become over almost 3 weeks of trying new things, being surrounded by people who are on the same page as them, and not just positivity and happiness for its own sake. There's so much more to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the theme of our camp this year is out of this world, and there's two meanings to that. One is we need to come out of this world. There's a lot in the Bible that talks about just how we need to separate ourselves from the things in this world that can pollute us, that can occupy our thinking and pull it away from God. And that is just becoming clearer and clearer how toxic the culture of the world is, how important it is to be vigilant, to protect yourself from that. And we're, you know, we're talking to the kids about specific things like, you know, how you talk, the words that you use, how you dress, the food that you eat, the music that you listen to, the movies that you watch. Like, you can't just kind of have this casual, like, accepting these things into your mind and into your life. You really do need to be attentive to those things and watch your heart, guard your heart, guard your thoughts, and make sure that they're being directed to where, to the positive things, the upbuilding things, the godly things. You got to come out of this world. But if you do that, the opportunities that God has for you in your life really are out of this world. I mean, we've been talking to these kids about just how important they are to God's family, how important they are to God's work. You know, this is our next generation. This is our future. The kids that come through SEP, they're the ones that end up going to the college. They're the ones that so many of them, you know, get hired and are employees. Like, you know, you came through that system. There's a whole lot of people that are doing phenomenal things for the work of God. And we're basically trying to help them to see, like, the more capable you become, the more use you can be to God. I mean, even if you don't go to the college here, you're not hired. If you're thinking in terms of trying to become the most capable person you can be, to be useful for God, that gives your life direction. It gives you purpose. It gets you excited about possibilities and realizing your potential. We're talking about these little victories that take place on a basketball court. Those are the stepping stones to, you know, the kinds of successes that God wants them to have in every arena of their life. Like, he really wants these young people to be capable, fulfilled adults who really have godly thinking and lead righteous lives and build righteous families. And I think we're trying really hard to help those kids make those connections between the choices that they're making day to day and that future that God wants for them.
There is hope out there, Trumpet Hour listeners. There is hope for young people. There is a summer educational program where young people are happy, where they're learning, where they're growing, and where they're heading for that incredible potential. So, summer educational program co-director and evangelist and Trumpet Hour creator Joel Hilliker, we thank you for joining us today, and thank you for everything you're doing with the youth.
Oh, it's a great, great pleasure. Thanks so much.
This brings us to the conclusion of Trumpet Hour for today. Email me at letters@thetrumpet.com. We have been getting letters, emails from Alan, from Jerry, from Patty, from Leanne, from Karen, from David, from Randy, from Iris, from Rose, from Jim. I'm taking the liberty of just first names here, but thank you to you if you are one who has written in. I've heard from some of you in person as well, whom I know. We've talked about different shows, in particular our show on April 19th. If you remember the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building and the Waco siege, we talked about that. If you remember that or remember the show. And speaking of remembering, you and I have emailed back and forth a little on what we were talking about when we did the show on July 4th, 1976. That was the bicentennial year. So please do email your thoughts on the program, your thoughts on the issues we're bringing up, your thoughts on news, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. Jesse Hester is he who puts all these bits and bytes in their orders, selects the music and effects, and turns this from a man or two at a microphone or two into something that you can listen to. So thanks to him. And again, thank you for listening. And we look forward to being back with you on the Week in Review on Friday here on Trumpet Hour.